have I mentioned that I'm not really much of a fan of Alabama? But there they are with another championship. So anyway, I just have to learn to live with it, I guess. Alabama, I don't know what it is, the color. It's the colors of the team. It's the coach. It is the fans. It is the way that they walked on top of my ducks. I mean, all of these things were very unpleasant, you know. And by the way, if you're feeling also like I am a little bit perturbed that Alabama took out Clemson, don't feel bad, because it'll make you feel better to know that Hillary Clinton is down in the polls. My goodness. Cow, I don't know what happened to her. Maybe people got a whiff of reality with her. I don't know, but she's plummeting, absolutely plummeting in the polls. And at least in a couple of races. So anyway, considered to be one of the great championship games of all time. Of course, this is one of the few championship games we've ever had, so it didn't take much, does it? But we've got Alabama here. I don't like Nick Saban. I was down in Miami when he was the coach down there, and he acts like he's the Pope. I don't know where the guy gets off. But anyway, I would not be surprised if he ended up in a mental institute thinking he had purchased the universe. But I got a little clip here for you in just a second. There we go. SEC. I hate the SEC too, while I'm at it, while I'm bearing all of my true feelings.
As a young reporter sitting in the audience at Bear Bryant's retirement announcement in 1982, I never dreamed any coach would challenge his title as college football's greatest coach.
I can't take it. I can't take it. I cannot listen to salutation of Nick Saban, but let's all right, so Auburn, or pardon me, Auburn. Anyway, this is Clemson, Alabama. Clemson or Alabama won, so let me find you a worthwhile. They're calling him the best coach of all time. I just, thank God they're on the other side of the country. But it was a good game, and Clemson certainly had their chances for winning, and you can't blame them for taking a shot. You might say that they were out of their league, but I mean it really was a pretty good game. And there were some back and forth, et cetera. And I've got a little bit of a Fox without the claim that Nick Saban's the greatest coach ever. But I think the playoff is a good setup. I think it's, people every year were always saying, what if, my team was undefeated? Why weren't they the national champion? Or, this team had two wins. This other team had one win. How do you square this? So I think that the playoff is still in it, taking its baby steps. But here's a little bit from the Fox Sports on the game.
Brass stone. Ooh. From Nick Saban.
It is.
High game. Oh, 5 minutes left, and he pops up that onside kick. Yeah. I mean, you were watching it with me. We were both stunned beyond belief. Everybody who watched that game and is now watching us, also stunned beyond belief. What did Alabama do to win this game?
Well, I thought, first and foremost, aside from just talking about Bama, right, or what Clemson maybe didn't do, first and foremost, in a championship environment, teams played amazing football. Yeah. The level of execution tonight on that stage, on a big environment, I mean, I was so impressed with both teams. You guys have been on that stage. Yeah. You know how hard it is to execute on that stage. Yeah. Yeah. Deshaun Watson was unbelievable.
Legendary.
I mean, he really had 478 total yards against that Alabama defense. But it really did come down to the fourth quarter when it was winning time. The coach that has three national championships at Alabama, Nick Saban, he coached like he was going for a ring and not just trying to hang on. Yeah. And that onside kick was evidence. That was brilliantly conceived, brilliantly executed. I loved watching that game. That was everything you love about college football.
It was a spectacular game. Somebody had to lose it, Reggie. Yeah. What did Clemson do that cost them this game?
Well, I think it comes down to the big plays they gave up. And at the beginning of every game, when you're going through your notes and your game planning, coaches always talk about giving up the big plays and how giving up big plays will get you beat. And I think you saw that. And I was very surprised to see just how poised Jake Coker was and how he played all game. He played with a lot of heart and guts. And I thought one of his best plays was the QB boot towards the end of the game where he got the first down. I mean, that showed a lot of heart and guts. And then, like you said, you talk about the special teams for Alabama, and they just turned it on in fourth quarter.
To me, it was Deshaun Watson had not just a great performance, a legendary performance. We talk about how good Vince Young was against you guys.
Yeah.
He put up 429 yards.
It was eerily similar to that game. And I kept thinking, wow, Deshaun Watson's going to come back and lead him.
At least make people stop talking about me. But 478 total yards. The problem was, guys, he was their leading rusher.
Yep. Right.
He was their leading passer. Yeah. And there just wasn't anybody who stepped up enough and could co-star with Deshaun Watson on this big stage. He was, like I said, epic. He had an incredible performance, but there just wasn't that player who could take it to the next level and join him.
He was the best player on the field, either team. But Alabama was the team that executed the best.
Yes.
So it just goes to show you that with the injuries in particular to Mackenzie Alexander, that really hurt Clemson because you saw what the passing game did, in particular in the fourth quarter. There was too many breakdowns in coverage at the safety position, communication between the corners and the safeties. That really hurt the Clemson Tigers and allowed Coker some easy throws. Yeah. Now, he took advantage. I don't think Coker played poorly by any stretch, but he had some easy throws down the field. That those breakdowns in coverage, I thought, were really the reason why Alabama was able to be so explosive.
And I thought, again, we joke about Lane Kiffin last week against Michigan State, but it was another great game plan.
I always just wonder if he's going to run the ball.
You always wonder what he's going to do because he wants to throw that ball.
He does.
But how about Ridley last week being featured, going deep, all the explosive plays, and then O.J. Howard in this football game, sort of, unnoticed all season long. A great talent, obviously. But Lane Kiffin did a great job of attacking this defense. Now, there was some miscues. But I thought O.J. Howard stepped up when they needed a big-time player.
O.J. Howard had 330-some-odd yards receiving in the season.
Yeah.
He put up, I'm looking at the stat sheet right now, 208 yards. You watch out.
It was
that guy's going to end up being a first-round pick. He's going to come out early in this game.
All right, so anyway, Alabama wins. Is really, I don't know. Good for football. Great game, 45-40. And, so hopefully they'll figure out a way to make the playoff deeper, bring some more teams in. I think that's what they need to do. That's my opinion, of course. Just my opinion. But anyway, I think that the more teams, the more excellent teams that you can involve, then the stronger the claim is that you've got the national champion. But no doubt that Alabama had an excellent year. Clemson had an excellent year. And the onside kick was epic. All right, we're saluting David Bowie this week. He just passed, 69 years old. Incredible career. Performer. Fashion icon, arguably. Actor. Writer. And kind of a visionary. And Pat Metheny did a soundtrack for Falcon and the Snowman with this guy. He did a song, and he said that the song "This Is Not America," he said he was the most creative person he'd ever met. So he was a force of nature. Anyway, 6:15. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1455, 523-1450, and we'll be back. We're going to be talking to Walt Rubel when the break of the hour comes, but. Before that, I've got a couple of juicy stories for you. One is that Hillary's going down in the polls and a few others. I think the Powerball, what is it up to? $1.4 billion now, some ungodly amount. And we'll be right back to talk about those things.
but pulls in just behind the fridge. He lays her down. He's brown. My life's a funny thing. Am I still silly young? He kissed the girl in there. She took his ring. Took his baby. Heaven knows he's a bacon in the finger.
All right, so as I said, Hillary is really getting shut down a little bit. Now, Dick Morris has said Hillary plummeting in polls because of new scrutiny on Bill's exploits. I think this is 100% true. I think this is the Trump effect. The Trump effect says that when Trump encounters another political character, they will interact and exchange unpleasantries, whatever, and the person who goes after Trump will end up going down in the polls. That's what I've noticed every single time. And I think it's because it's like Scott Adams, who did the which I know I've probably driven you crazy with this guy, but Scott Adams, who writes Dilbert, talks about the fact that he's a master wizard and he does verbal kill shots. I really think there's something to it, and I don't think it's anything hocus pocus. So he hasn't put a magic spell on Hillary. I think what happens is he either has just a profound instinct for this stuff, or somebody helps him come up with it. But it is absolutely uncanny. The stuff that he comes up with and the way that he says it is devastating. It's absolutely devastating. And so when Hillary gets up to do her fake laugh and her, you know, I'm for women, I'm for girls, I'm for kids things, and then she comments on, you know, she comments on Trump and how sexist he is, blah, blah, blah. Trump is not afraid in the least to roll out the, you know, the fact that she was the chief enabler of the Bill Clinton sexcapades. And so and bringing it back to people's memory and then saying along the way, by the way, I'm only doing this because she brought it up. She made it a subject. If she drops it as a subject, then we'll go back to square one on this thing. But I just think that she's lost this point, and she's not going to be able to bring up the point anymore. And not only that, it's discredited her. And I'm just kind of fascinated at how skillful this guy Trump is. And I'm not saying that I'm backing him. I'm not saying that he's going to win, but I think a head-to-head race with Hillary, personally, I think he would win that just because she's not in his weight class in terms of interacting, you know, and she's got 1,000 faces that she puts on, but he's always pretty much the same person, you know. She's a feminist one day, the next day she's a capitalist, another day she's a socialist, another day she's for women, and it doesn't add up really. So I believe that she's in a lot of trouble in this race, and she might, you know, taking on a socialist. I mean, who couldn't win that? But on the alternative, I am just wondering where this is going to go for her. Now, here is Dick Morris, who was a trusted advisor and helped salvage Clinton's presidency, talking on the Maltzberg show. And Dick Morris, whether you like him or not, and he is kind of a slimy character at times, has got some great insights.
Now, let's watch Hillary on Sunday.
But the important point here is I had great confidence because I'd worked with Jake Sullivan for years. He is the most meticulous, careful person you could possibly do business with. And he knew exactly what was and wasn't appropriate. And in fact, as the State Department has said, there was no transmission of any classified information. So it's another effort by people looking for something to throw against the wall, as you said in the beginning of the program, to see what sticks. But there's no there there.
No there there. Well, I think our next guest would beg to differ. As promised, Dick Morris, Newsmax TV political analyst, presidential strategist, and best-selling author of Power Grab, Obama's Dangerous Plan for a One-Party Nation, joins us. Dick, of course, she's talking about an email revelation from the State Department came out the other day that Hillary, this is related to a fax, which was classified. She said, take the classification off and send it through the unsecure fax. And you wrote a great piece that asked the question, will this smoking gun end Hillary's bid?
Well, I think that it's a very serious email. There have been 1,300 emails that have been released with classified material on them. And we know it's classified because when the State Department released it, it redacted all or some of the text because it was classified. Now, that belies her comment that she did not use, send, or receive classified material over her private server. But this email is different. This is an email where Jake Sullivan said, hey, I want to send you talking points that you need, but I can't get the darn thing to go over the classified secure server. What should I do? And she said, cut off the header, cut off the fact that it's classified, and send it over a non-secure server. Now, in reply, and therefore she's directing him to commit a crime. Now, in reply on Face the Nation, the clip, prior to the clip you showed, Hillary says, oh, it didn't go through. You know, he didn't act on it. What difference does that make? If you tell somebody to rob a bank and they don't do it, you are guilty of encouraging someone to rob a bank. But she also said, hey, what happened here was that Sullivan had a lot of material and I needed it. Some of it was not classified. Some of it was classified. So I told him, hey, send me the non-classified stuff while you work on how to send me the classified stuff. But that's not true, because when the State Department released the copy, they redacted the whole thing,
yeah,
every word. So obviously none of it was not classified. And this also shows Hillary having a real facility with knowing how to get around the law in getting this stuff off on non-secured servers. This person who can't type, doesn't know how to use a remote.
You mean wipe the server clean with the faucet?
How do you get Madam Secretary? Yeah, that's right.
Oh, boy.
That's right.
Well, now there's another part of this. There's a report out today that the FBI has expanded its investigation of Hillary to include to see if public corruption laws were broken with an intersection of the Clinton Foundation and the State Department. I mean, this is a whole new avenue.
And in particular, Uma Abedin is the person who commuted back and forth between the State Department and the Clinton Foundation, being on both payrolls at the same time. And it also could implicate Sidney Blumenthal, who was giving her advice at the State Department while being paid by the Clinton Foundation. But there are two more subtle points here. Number one, it came out that the FBI has asked 100 of its agents to sign non-disclosure agreements. That would indicate a huge workforce focusing on this project. And secondly, this story appeared in Fox News. That means that Fox has a source in there that is willing to share the information. And that means that when they come out with a report, if they do, blasting Hillary, That'll come out in public. It won't be a private report, regardless of whether Lynch decides to indict her or not.
All right, Dick, the new polls out today show that Bernie Sanders is indeed more than just a threat to Hillary. He could indeed win Iowa and New Hampshire. Interesting that Barack Obama has said just the other day, or his people said, that the president will not endorse a candidate. He'll wait till there's a nominee. Let me ask you, is that significant? How significant? And if Hillary is in trouble to Sanders after Iowa and New Hampshire, does someone else get in the race, like Joe Biden, reemerge?
I think that's a real chance. We have to focus on the incredible fact that the media really didn't cover. They published the polls, but they didn't do the analysis. That Hillary has fallen apart among female voters over the last 3 weeks. Among all voters, she used to be beating Trump by 10 points. Now she's losing to him by 3. She used to be beating Cruz used to be beating her by 2 points. Now he's beating her by 9. Rubio used to be beating her by 3. Now he's beating her by 10. And the entire change has been among women voters, no men voters, but Hillary's dropped an average of 13 points among women in the last 3 weeks. I believe that is largely due to Bill Clinton and to all the publicity and expose of his sexual activities and of her efforts to cover them up and to enable them. Now, all of this is interrelated. If Bernie Sanders beats her in Iowa and New Hampshire, which I think he will, that will show that she's in very tough shape politically. And with these polls out and with those results in, there might be a lot of pressure for someone else to get into the race, like Biden. And if there's a chance that she could be indicted and the indictment would knock her out of the race and free her delegates who are already on the ballot to commit to Biden and run as Biden delegates, you could still see that happen over the course of the next 4 to 6 weeks.
And one more. Donald Trump said just yesterday that it's his dream. Might have said it this morning. It's his dream to run against Bernie Sanders. He used to say it was Hillary's worst nightmare for her to run against him. Now he revealed his dream. What's the purpose of that?
Well, anybody on earth can defeat Bernie Sanders. So that's probably what Donald's talking about. But I think the Democrats know that anybody can beat Sanders. So if Hillary is showing signs that she can't beat Sanders,
right,
that, and that she's in trouble with the Justice Department, and that Obama's not supporting her, and that women are running away from her, that all increases the pressure on Biden.
All right. So ruminations from a toe sucker, as you recall, Dick Morris was caught sucking toes of a prostitute or something, and was embarrassed. But you know, I think you can say, be fair here, if you're a Democrat, you can't imagine somebody like Hillary Clinton running for the GOP with all of her problems. I'm sure the counterattack to that, though, is that Trump is in some ways like Hillary Clinton. But I really do think that she's just got a lot of baggage. She got a lot of baggage, and she could get indicted. I don't know if she got indicted. If she drop out, I think that would kill her chances. But I think it was a rookie mistake to drag Bill Clinton, with Donald Trump going off the way he's going, to drag her husband into this. Things have changed since Bill Clinton was in the presidency. It hasn't been that long ago, but people see a sex and they see the sexual assault or claims about that type of thing differently. It's no longer a he said, she said. It's if the woman says that she was sexually assaulted, we have to believe her. That's Hillary's line. Now that's being used against her. We'll take a break here and come back. And let me see here. I don't know if you guys have any more interest in the story about El Chapo. I've got a little clip on that, but I've also got a rat story, a couple of rat stories you might find interesting. Kelly O'Connell, 633 AM, Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523, 1450, and we'll be right back.
All night, sing with the young. John American.
Young American, young American. She wants a young American. All night.
She wants a young American.
All right. Okay, so we've talked about the Powerball, and I think that we've come to the conclusion that it's a $1.4 billion Powerball. Why can't we turn off the national debt with Powerball? I'm just curious. Anyway, here is from ABC News.
We turned out a Powerball. No one won yet again, and now the biggest jackpot in history tonight, $1.4 billion and counting. The jackpot's so big, look, the lottery signs can't even keep up this evening. And incredibly, this number tonight, 28 people came one number from winning it all. Here's ABC's Lindsay Davis.
The latest Powerball jackpot of $1.4 billion, the cash value just shy of $868 million. In the latest drawing,
it all comes down to this.
28 tickets match the five white balls. For $1 million each. Only one person has hit the jackpot since October when the rules changed and it became much harder to win. In Lincoln, Nebraska, a group of coworkers came so close to winning the jackpot, they walked away with a $1 million prize, which they'll have to split 32 ways. They aren't the only ones cashing in. State lotteries generate about $68 billion in sales each year, and a cut goes back to state budget.
A portion of the sale goes to aid New York State school children, just like them.
Lottery officials say about 75% of all potential combinations were purchased Saturday's drawing,
And the expectation is that about 80% will be covered by Wednesday. David?
All right. So I read an article last night that said that there's enough money in the Powerball now that you could buy every combination of ticket. And with the money you invested, you'd still have like $500 million left over, $300 million, whatever. But they have to be purchased individually, so nobody would have the time to do that. You know? So, anyway, let's see here. 523-1450. And by the way, back by popular demand, what would you do with your Powerball winnings?
Here at the line where people are doing it the old-fashioned way, they're just filling out bubbles here. I want to turn some of these people around and ask you guys, sir, can I ask you what your lucky numbers are?
I'm going to pick 14, 24, 2, 7, and 15.
Oh, those are your lucky numbers. Can I tell you what? Do you know your chances of winning?
Slim to none.
Slim to none. You're right. Let me tell you, it's one out of 292 million. What do you think about that?
I knew it.
You knew it. Your numbers are lucky, though. Am I right? Can I ask you, if you won all the money, what would you do with it?
Bunch of hookers and cocaine.
Oh, okay. That's not good. We were hoping for a different answer. That's probably not the answer that we're looking for. All right. $500 million.
Reporter's now dating that guy, by the way. That's just my impression. But anyway, that's going viral. It's going viral around the country. Okay, kids, don't follow his example. You'll turn out to be like David Bowie. Anyway, David Bowie had a very serious drug problem, and there was a report he was with Brian Eno in, I think, Berlin, and he put, at some point, they were out eating, and He just kind of laid his face down in his plate. He was full of despair, but David Bowie kicked off his drug problems to keep going with his career. Anyway, 641 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and we'll be back. I'm going to try to squeeze this rat story in here.
Put the freak and the cycle for nothing. This is a death of God's hand.
All right, it's 6:43. It's chilly outside, by the way. It's very chilly outside. 29 degrees, and it was even colder when I got up. All right, so here is a story, a sad story. Infant mauled to death by rats in Mexico. His teen mom is out dancing at party, and the teen mom in Mexico left her Lisbeth Geronima Fuentes Munguia, 18, went out on Sunday, and when she returned to her home in Ackleman near Mexico City on Tuesday morning, she found the baby lifeless in a cot. Her daughter's face, fingers, and torso had numerous chew marks. Paramedics pronounced the child dead. Fuentes' neighbors told local media that the single mother had allegedly left the infant in the care of a grandmother before heading out to go to a dance party that obviously lasted for days. And so a hungry pack of rats killed her child, and now she and Granny are in custody. All right, so here is, this is from New York, unlike anything I've ever seen. Mike Rao, reality star, describes his wild night with rat hunting dogs in New York City. Check this out. And these are all terriers.
You want to hear about the unreported war on rats in Manhattan? A subculture of people called rats, the Writer's Alley Trencher Fed Society. And here's the deal with rats, the acronym. These are every neighbor you've ever seen. Mild-mannered, unassuming people who look like Raymond Burr did in Rear Window. Everybody's neighbor, and they all have these little lap dogs, these 13, 18, 20 pound terriers, and it all looks completely benign. But at night, when the sun goes down, the members of the rats congregate downtown with their dogs, and they go on a rat hunt in New York City. And it's unlike anything I'd ever seen. It's, these people are transformed into barbarians.
Dogs chewing on rats.
You bite them anywhere you grab them. Yeah.
Shaking dumpsters while rats come out.
Terriers, these loyal pets, are transformed into like the Hound of the Baskervilles. And together they go into the city and they start killing rats.
He flushed it out and killed it himself.
Dogs fighting to retain possession of their hard-won rats.
Everywhere. That night, I was with him for less than an hour. I saw him kill 60 stacked up on the sidewalk. The rats in New York City are completely out of control, and nobody knows exactly to what degree. Some experts say they're 2 billion. Some experts say they're 15
billion. And so I take them.
Are you trying to solve the rat problem in New York City? I have no intention of solving the rat problem.
Anyway, I think the audio on that's getting a little out of hand. But be that as it may, so these people get together and they have terriers. They have what looks like poodles. And they are going ratting. Now, it just so happens that during law school, I got this book called Tales of a Rat Hunting Man. And it was one of the most interesting books that I'd ever read. I mean, I found it in a dollar bin at Barnes and Noble, and I'm looking it up right now. But this guy's, his hobby was hunting rats, and he had terriers. And all right, so this guy's name was, bring it up here on Amazon. Tales of a Rat Hunting Man, David Brian Plummer. If you want to get a good book, although it's listed here as $75, so you want to get a different edition of it. But in any event, it was absolutely fascinating. And in talking about his life, the kind of the life story of rats and how intelligent they are, and you know how you train the dogs to get them and everything, and some kind of memorable battles or whatever. Sounds disgusting, but it's actually fascinating. 6:48, Kelly O'Connell Show, and we are going to take a little break here, and we'll come back, and I'm going to squeeze in a little bit of El Chapo news, okay? 6:49 on the button. All right, so Sean Penn, famous actor, although I can't remember the last famous movie he did, but he was involved with the El Chapo raid and accidentally, according to him, led the police to El Chapo, and they were discussing, and he went to Mexico to meet this guy down in some little rinky-dink town on the coast, but and the guy came out wearing a wife beater that looked like something that you would normally associate with the war on Iraq. You know, and they capture these guys and they're in a shirt that hasn't been washed in a year. The guy's a billionaire, you know. So anyway, this guy wanted him to make a biography of him to tell his story, you know. A little touch of Frank Sinatra there. And but he ended up getting caught, and then they put him back into the same jail he was in before. I wonder if they put him in the same cell. I don't know. Well, here's a little bit more on that raid. And do you think it's wrong for Sean Penn, famous leftist actor, to go down and meet with this guy and not help the authorities catch him? Do you think it's kind of cool? Do you admire that? Do you think it was wrong? Do you think he had any duty to turn him in? Was he a journalist? Was he just a thrill-seeking, Hollywood celebrity who thinks that he's living large? All right, here's a little bit from ABC News on the raid that got...
Begin tonight with the new and dramatic pictures of the takedown of El Chapo. The intense raid, the firefight to capture the drug lord, assault teams going room by room hunting for the infamous drug lord, responsible for a quarter of the drugs coming to the U.S. And tonight, Sean Penn is now breaking his silence. What he's now saying about his secret meeting with El Chapo, all while Mexican and U.S. authorities were on the hunt for him. ABC's Matt Gutman in Mexico taking us inside the drainage pipe El Chapo crawled through just as those special forces moved in.
Arriba! It's almost 5 a.m. Mexican Marines closing in on El Chapo. The moment the safe house door busts open at gunfire. Inside the squad of bodyguards, one Marine hit in the arm. Another Marine pulling the pin on a grenade, tossing it inside. The explosion shakes the house. The Marines move in through the smoke, climb the stairs, search the top floors. The shootout killing five of El Chapo's men, but no sign of the narco. It was a Hollywood handshake that helped lead to the raid. That image documenting Oscar winner Sean Penn's clandestine interview with the drug lord for Rolling Stone magazine. Mexican soap opera star Kate Del Castillo making the introduction. Authorities reportedly tracking their every move as they arrived together in Mexico, even taking these surveillance images obtained by a Mexican paper. The two stars apparently taking this plane to El Chapo's jungle hideout. The kingpin hoping Del Castillo would make a biopic about his life, starting with this video.
He says, I want to make clear this interview is for the exclusive use of Miss Kate Del Castillo.
And Sean Penn. Telling Penn he's unrepentant about being a drug lord. He says there's no...
What he does, he says, is a way to survive. There's no other way to work in our economy to be able to make a living. It's either you're a drug salesman or nothing.
No other way to survive. Penn telling reporters today he has nothing to hide. That safe house this afternoon showing battle scars. The Marines ransacking it, searching for the narco.
And right through here is this trap door. This is the secret passageway and doorway that leads to the tunnel down there.
I had to come through here, down this step into this muck. Now there are all sorts of snakes in here, and I had to crawl under that to get over there. Just beyond there is that door. It looks like a door on a submarine that leads right into the drainage system.
We're under to the yard, El Chapo, and Lieutenant crawled through here. I can't even crouch. It's about 3 feet high.
Authorities finally tracking him down in a stolen car, then taking this picture as proof. El Chapo was now in a Supermax that's been fortified so he doesn't escape again as he awaits extradition to the U.S., but we're told that could take over a year. David?
A Supermax? It's in the same stupid prison that he was in before. What do you mean a Supermax? Although it may be the best fortified prison in Mexico, it is still not much of a prison from what we've seen already. Anyway, I guess there'll be a lot more stories, and they probably, they'll probably make a movie out of this guy and probably have Sean Penn as one of the players in the movie as opposed to the star. But maybe Sean Penn will be the star. Who knows? He is. It's funny how these Hollywood celebs just struggle to get credibility. He flies to Haiti. You know, he goes to New Orleans and walks around with a shotgun. In this El Chapo guy, I mean, why didn't this guy go to Central America? Why didn't he go to like the most lawless place and just buy or build a castle there or something? I don't understand why he's hanging around in this stupid condominium. We got a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, this is Bill.
Hey, what's up?
Sean Penn may have some real problems at El Chapo since he was responsible for getting him busted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was accidentally responsible, I guess.
One way or the other, but El Chapo may not know that.
That's a good point. Thanks a lot, man. Have a good day.
You too.
All right. So do you think that the government should do you think the government should prosecute Sean Penn? I guess there's no, if you go to another country, there's no responsibility for you to turn people in that are doing wrong or criminals or whatever. On the alternative, if you go from America to meet, I don't know what the law would be on that. I really don't. But I sincerely doubt he's going to be prosecuted. But it's funny that El Chapo did end up leaving. Speaking of rats, he ended up leaving this kind of this condominium that had, it did have a secret passageway with a heavily fortified door. And then that guy said that door, the door, he crawls through this passageway and gets to another door that looks like a submarine door. So this is obviously, they put a lot of money into this thing, but he ended up crawling through the sewer and coming out into, you know, an area where he jumped in a car and they still caught him. Kelly O'Connell, 6:59 on the button, and we'll be back and talk to Walt Rubel.
Do you remember your friend?
It is 7:06, and of course, as always, we have the convivial Walt Rubel on the show.
Convivial.
Convivial.
There's a lot to live up to, but good morning.
Happy, upbeat. Good morning. How's it going?
Going good. I'm convivial, so obviously it's a wonderful morning.
All right. So where did we leave off last week? But, you know, there's been a few events. David Bowie died.
David Bowie died. Yeah, we were just talking about what an artist he was. And I know you got into that yesterday.
Well, I really didn't get into it that far. I was looking for a clip on it, but I happen to know quite a bit about David Bowie that I learned along the way. And I know that you did the same thing, Walt, from what you're telling me. He's just kind of a fascinating person. And I'll tell you, now that memory is serving, I'm starting to remember some things. I was extremely impressed by him in the interviews.
Yeah.
He was one of the best interview subjects that I've ever seen. He came across as honest, forthright, not defensive, not angry. A lot of these people who get interviewed are like, why are you bothering me?
Well, I think David Bowie lived a life where he did a lot of things that people would consider to be sins. I mean, he was a drug addict. He was an anything sexual. I mean, you know.
Omnivore.
That's a good way to put it. But never seemed to do it in a predatory or menacing or a way that was damaging to anybody but himself in terms of the drug use. And never lied about it. I've never seemed to defend it in a way that would, I don't know. It's hard to put. I mean, it was just sort of like, If you want to talk about that, that's fine, and I'll honestly tell you what I think, but why don't we talk about other things that are more interesting? I mean, that was sort of the sense I got from
him. Yeah, and I mean, he was, as you were saying, an emblem of the age.
Yeah, very much so. But did you see the clip? It must have been mid-60s of him and Bing Crosby singing Little Drummer Boy.
Yeah.
I was just... To me, that was such a classic.
And totally unexpected.
Right. Clash of Bing Crosby being, you know, Mr. Establishment. And, you know, and this was back in the era where, you know, I think this was when Nixon was in office, and it was the hard hats versus the hippies. And,
yeah.
You know, and I think something as simple as that. And I know I get sentimental about these kinds of things, but something, you know, as simple as those two coming together to sing a Christmas song.
It's unfortunate that he did beat him after the recording, but
just visual image list lasts still to the day.
So. Just kidding. No, but Bing Crosby supposedly beat his kids. But I think that what was interesting to me about him is that when you scratch beneath the surface of him, as opposed to a lot of these other artists, a lot of these artists really, it reminds me of that song by Tom Petty where the kid gets he gets a jacket and a girlfriend and he gets a hit and everything.
That's
and everything.
Right.
And the world's wide open or whatever. The future
is wide open.
Yeah. Unlike that, David Bowie was, really into the arts. He was really into jazz He was really into visual arts. And, I read a book recently, Niall from the book, from the group Chic.
Yeah, Niall Rogers.
And he talked about his biography. He talked about his life. And one of his pinnacle of achievement in his mind was getting to meet David Bowie and work with him on, I think it was Let's Dance. But he said David Bowie was absolutely the most fascinating person. And when they met, David Bowie was talking about art. And art and art, and they just talk for hours about it. And I'm like, wow, the guy really had some depth beneath the stuff he was doing.
And I didn't realize, but I guess one of the movies he made, The Man Who Fell to Earth, part of that was filmed out at White Sands.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
so that makes
Kennedy.
Sense.
We have a little bit of a local connection.
So I would have liked to pick his brain before he died if I'd had the opportunity. He did everything. He had so many different guises, so many different phases. And then he had gone through drugs and sex and all these different things. And he ended up married with kids and everything. And I would have wanted to ask him through all of this. It's like kind of like Solomon. What did you learn?
Yeah.
What are your conclusions? You know, you've had an opportunity to try everything. And probably no thing that a person could do was off limits to this guy. What did you learn? What's your conclusion?
Right. Yeah. He did do, I don't know when he did it, but last week, I think because he had it, you know, incredibly, he's been 18 months battling cancer. But
and
he had
the most painful kind of cancer, pancreatic.
And had an album that just came out last week. And in celebration of that, VH1 did a Storytellers. Like I said, I don't know how long ago it was, but they just ran it last weekend. And he's talking about back in the day when he was meeting Steve Marriott, you know, I mean, way back in the roots of English rock and roll. You're right. He has seen it all. He's lived it all. It would be fascinating to, it's sad we'll never have that chance.
Well, you don't know what kind of like what he left behind. Some of these artists that are very, such as Prince. Prince has apparently a ton of unpublished music in the can.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
So you've got... this basically one of the most creative forces and I think he would have been an interesting guy to sit down and have a chat with. I mean, just I've never seen anybody more comfortable on the camera and seeming more genuine.
And that came through in that Storytellers that the VH1 showed. I mean, it was very as comfortable and loose as if he were, you know, sitting down talking to his best friends about this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Now, he'd had a massive heart attack about 10 years ago, and he had kind of retreated from the stage.
Yeah.
And then he ended up with cancer and pancreatic cancer and everything. And I mean, some of that stuff was undoubtedly at least partially linked to some of the excessive stuff that he did.
You have to think.
Yeah. You have to assume that. So, but I went to see him on this, when I was just a kid, I had a friend of mine going to who had a couple of tickets to Glass Spiders, so we went to see him on that. And he, I'll never forget this, he comes down from, there's the Glass Spiders had this giant spider, but it didn't look like a spider. It was obviously electronic and light lit up and everything. He comes down from the top of the spider and he was reciting some speech, and it was the most memorable opening of a show that I'd ever seen. It was just brilliant.
Yeah. See, I regret I never did see him live. And honestly, back then when he was in that era, I wasn't into it. I thought it was too theatrical. I mean, it was, you know, you have to remember that there were so many other bands out there that were theatrical and over the top at that
time. Such as Kiss?
Yes. Emerson, Lake and Palmer. I'm thinking that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think he was really before Kiss. I mean, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
He was a very influential and probably influenced Peter Gabriel.
Yes.
To a certain extent, although they would have been contemporaries, but
of Genesis,
but Peter Gabriel went through that super artsy phase. But I think it was kind of interesting to stick art concepts, which is more of a British thing because they have such a, their national theater goes back to Shakespeare.
Yeah.
That and the strongest theater in the world, the theater history, that you had this real. I don't think it was unforced. Whereas in America, we expect our musicians to stand up there like the Eagles and sing.
Yeah, no, that's right. Or you know, do like Marilyn Manson and Alice Cooper and take it entirely the other way, but. But there was something very British and to me a little bit pompous about all of that kind of stuff. And so now I'm, you know, years later, I went back and re-listened to it without all the stage and theatrics, just listening to the CD. And he said, man, that's pretty good.
Well, he had some of the catchiest riffs. He really got into Motown. He really studied Motown to try to understand what it was, what made, you know, Motown so catchy. And so, you know, and so he had a lot of,
That's right.
He had a kind of a black sound in a lot of his, music. And as a matter of fact, he went on, what's the name of the show? Soul Train.
Yeah. Don Cornelius.
Yeah. And so he was on there and, I saw, clip of that. He looked out of his mind. I mean, to be totally honest.
I'm sure he was.
Probably was. But anyway, well, let's play a little bit of Fame here, one of his famous songs. And we're here with Walt Rubel, 716. It's a little chilly there. It's about 30 degrees outside. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 23-1450. And we'll be back. And anything local going on to talk about?
Yeah, Real ID. We need to get into that.
All right, we'll get into that. We'll be right back. All right, so it's 7:21. It's about 30 degrees outside. Today is the 12th of January, and we've got Walt Rubel here just talking about David Bowie, but switching gears into Real ID.
Yeah, Real ID. Yesterday morning, folks at Wismer, I think, surprised everybody and said that New Mexico driver's licenses are no longer good to present as ID to get onto the base, which really was a curveball. They had told us, well, they had told everybody up until this point that, well, two things. One is that we are still accepting the driver's license, but two, Department of Defense has the call on this, not us. And they could change their mind at any time.
All right, so what is the issue? I mean, what makes our IDs unacceptable?
Yeah, let's if I can't, let me just go back to the start. 2003,
please do. Please do.
Okay. 2003, the state legislature, at the direction of Bill Richardson, passes a law that people, illegal immigrants, can get New Mexico driver's license. And at the time, there were a lot of law enforcement officers who were pushing for that. Their argument was that when we pull somebody over, we need to be able to know who we're dealing with. We need to know if they have insurance. The thought was that more people would get insurance because you have to have it to get a driver's license, and that it would improve safety on the roadways. That was the argument, and so it was passed. A few years later, the federal government passed a bill called Real ID, which is not a federal identification card, but sure, kind of that whole thing, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck. What Real ID does is it establishes a whole lot of standards that states have to meet on their driver's licenses for the driver's licenses to count as identification. And the reason that's important is because mainly two things. One is to enter a federal building or installation like White Sands. And the other one is to get on an airplane. So there are two things that this means. Immediately, you know, starting yesterday, our driver's licenses will no longer be good to get into White Sands and other Army bases. Now, that's the confusing and frustrating thing about this. You can still get into Holloman. You can still the Army has one set of rules. The Air Force has another. That's how confusing and muddled the situation has been. Jay Johnson, the Secretary of Homeland Security, did come out last week and say, we're not going to do anything with airplanes until 2018. And so there is, you know, something of a reprieve. If you're traveling, you don't have to worry about it for another couple of years. If you're planning to take part in the Bataan Memorial March that is held every year at Wismer or some other function on the range, and you don't have a passport and to be clear, all kinds of military ID work. So if you work there, that's not going to be a problem. If you're a contractor, it might be a problem. I mean, for your employees getting in there, there are all kinds of practical issues.
Is this a disaster?
It's not a disaster, but it is certainly a man-made crisis. And partly, as I said, I put the federal government to blame because they passed this law, and then they immediately pass extension after extension after extension, and nobody, it gets to the point where nobody thinks they're actually going to enforce it. And so when they do, it catches everybody by surprise and off guard. Getting back a little bit, walking this back to, okay, so they passed this thing in 2003. You asked me, why haven't they changed it? They've known that this has been coming for 10 years, I think. So I forget how long ago Real ID was passed at the federal, but a long time ago. The immediate reaction to Real ID in conservative states was, forget that. You know, because to them it did smell like a federal ID card.
Is it a federal ID card?
It smells like it to me.
So what are we going to do?
Well, okay, that's the question. So now we have a legislative session starting next week. When we come in here next week, all of our lawmakers will be gathered in Santa Fe preparing to hear the governor's State of the State address. As we speak today, well, let me back this up a little bit, too, because this is frustrating. I just want to paint the whole picture. Our members of Congress went to Homeland Security and said, our legislature doesn't start till January 19th. This is scheduled to take effect January 10th. Is there anything we can do about it? They said, yes. If your legislature could just send a letter telling us that we have an agreement in place, we can't pass it yet because we're not going to meet, but you know, here it is, that would be fine. And they couldn't even do that.
Why?
They waited until the very last day, and then they sent letters back and forth.
Who would be at fault for that?
Everybody. And to be clear, Republicans are now in control of the House of Representatives, and Democrats are still in control of the Senate. And the governor, in my opinion, has exhibited no leadership. Zero. None. She has been an obstacle. She has finally agreed to go along with this House plan, which for the very first time does come up with a two-tiered license where people could drive. But this is the first time in 7 years they've agreed to that.
And does the resistance from the governor have anything to do with the ID issue from days of yore?
Oh, I'm sure it does, and I think it's helped her politically. It's an issue, one of not a lot of issues in what I think is a mostly Democratic leaning state. But opinion poll after opinion poll have shown that people are on her side on this, and so I think she has made the political calculation that I'm not going to compromise. And Democrats have made the calculation that, well, okay, that's what those opinion polls say, but in my district, the smart thing for me to do, or, you know, let's give them some credit, they may sincerely believe that, listen, these people need to drive to be able to function, to be able to live their lives. I mean, there is a valid argument to be made for that as well.
So how does this impact the average New Mexican, the average Dona Anyan?
Yeah, good question. So, like I said, right now it is the Army and the National Labs. And so if you wanted to go on WSBR, you would need to get a passport.
But what about your military ID?
No, that's assumed. Correct. You say the average person. I'm taking that to be somebody who doesn't work there, somebody who's not in the military. Any kind of military ID is good. Here's you want to really get the phone calls going. You know what else is good?
Sure.
If you are a foreign national here on a green card or a visa, that's good too. That'll get you in.
Huh. All right. So, I mean, realistically speaking, putting aside political affiliation, do you think that the governor made a misstep?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think everybody did. And I think, but I'm going to lay this on the Democrats here. Bill Soles had an op-ed that he ran, a guest column that he ran in our newspaper like 2 weeks ago, mocking the Republicans for suggesting that the federal government was going to do anything. There was a flood of people going to passport fairs. What you're going to need is a passport. If you're not in the military, if you're just the average Joe, you need a passport. And so he was suggesting that this was a bunch of misinformation put out by Republicans. They were just trying to sow confusion. Well, no, the Republicans aren't sowing confusion here. The federal government is creating confusion, intentionally or not. But Democrats were so confident and so cocky that nothing, you know, the federal government wasn't going to do anything. They've never done anything before. Why should we believe they're going to do something now? That they were just as resistant to compromise as Republicans.
So a game of chicken.
Exactly. And, you know, listen, I think there's a pox on both houses. I think if they don't get this fixed in this session, people should revolt.
Okay, well, we'll see what a non-Second Amendment revolt looks like, but we've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Good morning, guys. Hey, this is Jim.
Jim, what's up?
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Maybe you can clear it up.
Go ahead.
I was in the Air Force, not a career guy, so I don't have the retirement card, but I do have DD-214 and a copy of my discharge and my license, of course, with my picture, which ties into those. Is that going to be acceptable?
I believe that's correct. We ran a whole list on our website yesterday, and I'm sure it's still up there. But you get into the military acronyms, and they all start sounding the same to me. But I believe that is acceptable.
Okay.
But it would be worth checking it out. Don't take my word for it before you drive up there.
Jim, hold on a second. What was that? Hold on, Jim.
I was just going to say, don't take my word for it. If you're going to drive up there and need to get in, give them a call or do something to check it out.
All right, yeah. Jim?
Yes. Well, I happen to be retired, but I work for a company that sometimes needs to go on the bases. And what they used to do is have one of the people that worked there that, you know, in the actual base, regardless of where they're at, they would come and get us and walk us through, and we'd show our driver's license, but they never asked for, like, military IDs. Now, I guess that's getting back to my question about the DD-214, because it ties you into your discharge, it ties you into your license, and I just wondered, you know, I'm just curious.
That's right. I believe that's right. But you make a good point. The economic impact of this is going to be on, you know, the contractors and the local workers who go up there to work.
So, I mean, I guess the upshot, and thanks for the call, Jim, I guess the point is go get your passport.
Well,
I mean, that's all you can say.
That's right. I mean, that is the protection. If you know, if you are concerned that the state legislature can't get its act together, and I would say that's a fair concern to have, then yes, that is the way you protect yourself.
That's an observation. So are we going to come back and talk about what your version of a popular protest and revolution looks like.
So we're angry letters to the editor.
Angry. Yes, I got care of Walt Rubel. We'll be right back. But talking to Walt about Real ID, it's a real issue, folks. It's now been thrown on our doorstep, and we got to deal with it. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. That's 523-1450. We'll be right back to continue on. Folks, I'm here with Walt Rubel, and a couple of things on the agenda. One is the Real ID, 523-1450, if you think the government has mishandled this. Now, also, we got more stuff going on with Kiki and the county and everything. So is that the big story this week, do you think, locally?
Well, it's the big story every week, isn't it? I mean, it never goes away. It never changes. To me, it's starting to get a little bit old. But, yeah, I mean, so the new news is that Kiki's chief of staff, Dennis Montoya, insists that they have all of these new cars coming that they absolutely need. That's one of the first things Kiki said was, you know, I've got all of these vehicles, 150,000, 200,000 miles. We've got guys doing high-speed chases, pursuits, all the things that you need to do when you're out there in a patrol car. And these are dangerous. We've got to get these replaced. And so that's starting to happen, which is a good thing. But it's in the world of Kiki, nothing is ever a good thing. And so what he is saying is, okay, we have all these brand new cars. Unless we get brand new computers to put in them, they're going to be used. That's what Dennis Montoya
said. Is there anything to that?
No, of course not.
How do you know?
Well, first of all, that's suggesting that a patrol car without a computer has no use. That you know, I don't buy that. I understand modern. But second of all, the question we ask them is, why can't you just take the computers out of the old cars? You know, the computers don't have 200,000 miles on them. The cars do. The computers were put in there, you know, like all the other computers. The computers in the old cars aren't any older than the computers in the other cars. Why don't you just take those computers? Well, they run Windows XP, and they're not under warranty anymore. So you tell me, does that sound like they're useless because they run an old operating system?
No, I don't. And Windows XP is, you know, I mean, that's like the Jurassic period, isn't it, of programming?
Yeah, I'm sure that makes them absolutely useless.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, XP, I don't think they're updating it anymore. I think they've said decoupling.
I understand that, and I understand that it would be ideal.
We are decoupling from this program.
Yeah, no, I get that. There are billions of them in use, I'm sure, today, right now, as we sit here. I mean, that doesn't mean that everybody's taking them and throwing them away.
All right. Well, no, I'm just, you know, just I don't know why he's saying that, but I just thought maybe there was some substance.
I think I know.
Which is?
It's nothing. Enough is never enough. Enough will never be enough.
Well, you know what they say, a closed mouth never gets fed.
Well, and I'm not saying he doesn't have needs. He does. What I am saying is that he has not gone about addressing those needs. You know, listen, I understand that Todd Garrison didn't do anything.
What, really?
There is a middle ground between what we had with Todd Garrison and what we have now with Kiki Vigil. I'd just like to see something in that happy middle.
What I admire about Todd Garrison was suffering in silence.
Yeah, if you call hunting and fishing suffering.
No, there's no reason to complain because the county commission has no interest in the sheriff's office, but I don't know. I mean, it just seems like it's a battle on more than one front here.
Oh,
right?
It is. And listen, I am not suggesting at all that Billy Garrett, Wayne Hancock, and the county commission have been open and transparent and honest about this either. They haven't.
Well, I heard that.
I'm just frustrated with the whole situation.
Okay. I heard Wayne Hancock is going to stay. He's not going to retire to Golden Gables or wherever he is in Florida, but he's going to stick around for another round. So,
well, I mean, filing day, I think he's up for election. His seat is up for election, and filing day hasn't come yet.
Well,
so.
I just heard a rumor that he's going to stick around, that he's, you know.
Yeah.
It would be a shame to waste that much wisdom, you know. But All right, so what is going on in the lawsuits, the Kiki lawsuits?
Well, not much. I mean, he has amended his lawsuit against Billy Garrett and Wayne Hancock to include Julia Brown mm-hmm. and Nelson Gooden. Now, this is the lawsuit in which Kiki is alleging that his First Amendment rights have been violated.
Yeah.
He has been muffled. He has been silenced. He is no longer able to speak out.
I thought I heard something.
Yeah.
Muffling.
Yeah.
Good. So
I don't know how skillful his attorney is, but good luck.
It sounds like a tough sell.
Yeah. If he has a jury of Doddiana County residents, I think that will be a tough sell.
I see. All right. So, folks, we're going to take a little break here with the ever-charming Walt Rubel, AM Las Cruces 1450, KOBE with Kelly. And hang in there. We're going to come back with even more exciting topics. 741 AM Las Cruces 1450, KOBE. 523-1450, 523-1450. Hey, it's Kelly.
Yes, this is Roger.
It's Roger. What's going on, man?
Can I make two more, a couple of quick comments on the
sure.
ID?
On the ID?
Yeah.
Okay, can I put you on hold for 20 seconds?
Sure.
Thanks. $0.4 billion, man. Are you playing? All right, so we've got a call from Roger. And Roger, good morning to you. You wanted to say something about Real ID.
Yes, a couple of quick comments. The first thing is that I think a lot of it ties into the government wanting more revenue out of the citizens. You know, they charge $110 for the State Department, $25 for the post office. So I think that's a thing about it. And the other quick comment I wanted to make was on the other caller that called about his DT-214.
Yeah.
It's all about identification purposes. So I don't think that DT-214 would do, because if that doesn't have a picture of you, it doesn't have a hologram, it doesn't have a seal, it's just a piece of paper. So I doubt that's going to work, but I may be wrong.
We should have that list on our website.
Okay, I'll go find it. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Roger. All right, and it's a list of what'll work for ID?
Yeah, that's right. It's a list of what'll work for ID, one of which is a driver's license from a state other than New Mexico, ironically enough.
So just go down to El Paso.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
On his other point, though, I assume he's talking about the cost to get a passport being a money-making thing. I think that's giving these people too much credit. They're not agreeing on anything here. That would suggest that they all sort of got together and planned this, and they're just not.
They're not that competent. Yeah. You've got another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
As usual, Walt is correct and spot on.
Frankie,
when he's talking to what?
Frankie, have you been shouting at the Alabama game?
Yeah. Well, no. I've been shouting at that Trumper guy and all the rest of the conservative whack jobs out there. You know, you probably noticed I got a little bit of a froggy thing in my throat, huh?
Yeah. It could be a side effect of the female hormones, but go ahead.
That's heavier.
No, there we go. You are so bad. That's why there's hardly any conservative comedians, because they are so flat, not funny. Anyway.
Female hormones will lift up the flatness.
What?
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Walt is 100% right when he says, you know, this business on a computer for the cop cars. The cop car computers are not like regular everyday computers people use. They just are designed to go to local law enforcement databases, federal databases, and that's basically it. They don't need any fancy yippee-yi-yay stuff. So this is a big come on. Just like Walt was saying, hey, you know, want more upon more and stuff. So Walt, again, is spot on with that. Way to go, Walt. You rock, baby.
God bless you, Walt. Thanks, Frankie. Save that voice. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Yeah, Frankie, screw you.
Oh, come on.
Thank you. Jeez. That's totally inappropriate.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so, well, let's take a little break here, and we'll kind of finish her up. 747 flying the friendly skies. It was friendly until Tom called up. We'll be right back. It's about 30 degrees outside, folks, and almost done with the show.
Doing all right, don't kind of get smart. Wish upon day upon day. I believe, oh Lord, I'll believe all the way. Run for the shadows, run for the shadows in his glory.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, this is Bill again.
Hey, what's up?
I got one for Walt here. This is a letter that was published in the paper about 3 or 4 weeks ago from a
Bill,
guy in El Paso.
Bill, we're off the air, just to let you know.
Okay, I know. You might bring it up. The whole idea behind giving these folks driver's licenses to begin with is bogus because there's a little thing called an international driver's license that will permit anybody to drive in this country. And it was a letter from a guy in El Paso about a month ago that brought this up. I think maybe that should be mentioned.
Thanks for the call. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Jerry. I want to ask Walt how this driver's license for illegal aliens, illegal immigrants, originated.
Jerry, hold on. I got another call. Be right back. Hey, this is Kelly. Who's this?
Kelly, this is Dennis. I'm the department manager for the sheriff.
Oh, fantastic. Can I put you on hold for just a second? What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about Mr. Rubel's comments about recycling radios.
Okay, all right. Dennis, oh, stop. Hold on a second. Hold on. Dennis, can you hold on just a moment?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Dude. Jerry, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
When we come back on, I'm running out of time and I got another caller, so just hit it fast, okay?
Yeah, okay.
All right. Well, I'll just keep you on hold. And you're going to comment upon an international driver's license.
I just want to know where this idea for driver's license for illegal immigrants originated.
Okay, hold on. We'll bring you on. Hold on. All right, folks, I've got somebody calling in from the sheriff's office, but first we have Jerry. And Jerry, you had a question about international driver's licenses?
No. I want to know, in New Mexico, whose idea was it in New Mexico to give driver's license to illegal immigrants?
Yeah, I explained that at the start of the show. It was passed in 2003.
Well, I wasn't there for the start of the show.
Okay. Shame on you. At least you have a public confession.
The answer is it was done in 2003 under the direction of Bill Richardson.
Thanks, Jerry. I got to run. Okay, Dennis, you had some comments in regards to the computers and the squad cars at the sheriff's office.
Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
I sure do. The computers...
And we should explain. I'm sorry.
Hold on. One at a time.
Suggested that we recycle existing computers into the new vehicles coming in.
Correct.
That's completely out of the question. We have 118 computers. Absolutely every one of them is deployed in the field. We are not retiring vehicles.
You're not retiring vehicles
that are coming in. We can't. We cannot without continuing to. Even more severely underserve the people of Doñana County.
Well, wait a minute. That's been your whole argument all along.
We don't have enough vehicles as it is.
We might be able
to begin to retire vehicles the next shipment that we get. Right now, we are simply trying to keep up with the cadets that we're graduating. So we've got 118 computers. 33 of them are running Windows XP, which is an obsolete operating system that Windows doesn't even support, that Microsoft doesn't even support anymore. A couple of those computers are crashing very frequently. So we're simply trying to keep up with the minimum that we need in order to use the vehicles that are coming in and be able to put our cadets that are graduating to work.
All right, Dennis, hold on a second. Can I use your whole name?
Yeah, Dennis W. Montoya.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We need to explain to people who this is. This Mr. Montoya is who I was talking about before.
Dennis, what's your official position at the sheriff's office?
I am the department manager for the sheriff.
Okay, go ahead, Walt.
Yeah, so we've been hearing all along that we have to retire these cars that have 150,000, 200,000 miles on them because they're not safe anymore. Now you're telling us that we're not going to do that?
I'm telling you that we're not there yet, Walt. We are not to the point where we can retire these vehicles immediately until we get some more vehicles.
Well, no, I understand.
We are simply keeping up with demand.
Okay, so let me understand this. Are the computers only to go? Are the computers linked to the new vehicles? Because that's the assumption I'm making. If you're making the argument that they're not, that this is a wholly separate issue, then that's fine. But what I'm scoffing at is this notion that you've got a computer in a car right now that you're using that's working, that if you get a new car, it would be useless, that there's no way possible that you could take that computer and put it in the new car. That's what I'm disagreeing with.
That assumes that we're retiring a vehicle and replacing it with a new car. And
that's absolutely right, because that's what we've been told all along, is that that's why you have to do this, is to retire those vehicles.
That's what our objective is, Walt. That's what our objective is, but we have not been allowed to purchase the total number of vehicles that we need. It's going to have to be phased in. It's going to have to be phased in over a period of a number of years and a number of budgets. You're absolutely correct. These high-mileage vehicles need to be retired, but we're not there yet.
Well,
we are only getting our first shipment of 29 vehicles. We've got 21 cadets graduating. So do the math. We've got to put these people in cars. We're not going to put the cadets in brand new cars. They're going to get the older vehicles. But we want to keep the people of Doña Ana County served with law enforcement. We can, if we take 29 vehicles out of service, we're going to have 29 deputies on foot. That's not what you want. That's not what I want. That's not what the sheriff wants. And most importantly, that's not what the people of Doña Ana County deserve. Now, we do not have computers to put in these cars.
Well, Dennis, let Walt, we're running out of time. Let Walt respond.
Well, I guess my question is, and I go back to the whole thing, are you saying that this is, are the computers connected to the new cars, or are you saying that this is a separate issue, kind of like the radios were a separate issue? If that's the case, then I'm in agreement with you. What I had a hard time with and still have a hard time with is the notion that, you know, what you were saying before, that we're just going to have to get these brand new cars and leave them sit on the parking lot, and we'll have our people drive around in cars with 200,000 miles on them. I think you went too far in trying to make your argument when you said that, and that's what I'm taking exception with.
Well, I don't think that's what I said.
Well, that's I said
that 29 vehicles without computers are useless to the people of Doña Ana County. The computer is the nerve center of modern policing. Every modern police force uses them. An officer cannot do his reports, cannot keep track of what's going on in the field, cannot effectively police.
Now, I get that.
Vehicle. And so, if I don't have a computer to put in every vehicle, that vehicle will sit there useless.
I understand
that. I cannot deploy it in the field.
I understand that. So of the 29 vehicles that you have, how many old vehicles will we be able to decommission when we get this fleet of 29 new ones?
Dennis?
Yeah, hang on a second.
I hear the wheels.
Okay. Well, we will not be able to decommission a single vehicle immediately.
Wow.
We simply do not have enough vehicles to put our people in.
Okay.
We're going to have to wait until we get more vehicles, and then we can start decommissioning the oldest one.
Dennis, has this been an enormously frustrating experience?
That would be the understatement of the century. We're trying as hard as we can. Now, I will say on a positive note, we've had two very good meetings with the county manager and the county finance manager. We're actually starting to communicate numbers back and forth. We are on the agenda for today's meeting. So this is some forward progress.
Well, can we get a report tomorrow? I got one more call I think I can squeeze in here. Can you call back and let us know what happened in the meeting?
Well, do you want me to call back here in how many minutes?
No, tomorrow.
Yeah,
where the show's
ending. At the end.
Oh, sure. I can call back tomorrow.
Thanks for
Donnie.
The call, Dennis. Okay, have a good day.
And can I just say very quickly, I know you've got another call coming in, but I am shocked that we've got all of these old cars and we're not going to be able to decommission one with 29.
I think it's cute to have a few Model Ts on the, you know, on the force. But this is Kelly. Who's this?
Yeah, my name's Tom Kelly. Real quick. We as taxpayers, we pay for fire and police protection and infrastructure. I wonder if the county manager driving around in a car that's got 250,000-300,000 miles on it, or the bureaucrats within this county. If you look at the budget, there's plenty of money for our sheriff's department, but we're wasting it everywhere else. That's all I need to say.
Thank you, Tom. And we have another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, you got to see that movie Del Toro.
Sorry, Tom. I got to cut you off. You said something naughty. Can't do that. Tom's on timeout for a couple of days here, folks. Let's be respectful. We're running out of time here. Walt, want to cap her off?
Well, we were talking about as we sit here next week, the legislature will be meeting in Santa Fe, 30-day session. This will be a budget session, but there's LID being at the top of the list.
And you'll come back next week and we'll talk about that.
You bet.
Thanks for coming in, Walt. Folks, thanks for listening in. Shame on you, Tom. Come on, let's keep this civil. This is a family show. 7:59 on the button. You've been listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. And Kelly O'Connell here. Thanks for spending the time with me. It was wonderful to spend a little bit of the morning with you. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Ciao.
Thank you.